Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
The Grinch. I think the reason why the Grinch is such a classic is because, if we're honest, there's a little Grinch in all of us. There's a little piece of us that needs to grow three sizes too, or our heart needs to grow three sizes too big or small. What is it? Our heart is two sizes too small. It needs to grow a little bit from where it's at. There's a piece of us where other people just seem to annoy us. I don't know if there's anybody who doesn't struggle with that on some level. And the other piece about it is, you know, where the Grinch struggles with understanding the meaning of Christmas. And, you know, throughout the story of the Grinch, each time it's told, he comes to the realization that maybe Christmas doesn't come from a store. Maybe it's about so much more. And this really echoes something that Jesus said in Luke chapter 12, where he said, your life does not consist of the abundance of stuff, of your possessions. It doesn't consist of everything that comes from the store. And so this morning, I kind of want to go into looking at where that whole thought came up from that the Grinch is based on in Luke chapter 12. And it goes back to one of those broken attitudes we have. And in this series, we've been talking about how there's attitudes that we have that lead to us being broke, because broke people think like broke people, and therefore they're broke. And these are kind of broken attitudes that we need to fix. And some of the broke attitudes we've talked about so far in this series, we talk about complaining about the stuff that we have. And when we complain about what we have, then we cannot really enjoy the stuff that we have. We can't really enjoy it or take delight in it. We're not thankful for what we have. We also talked in this series about coveting or being envious about what everybody else has. And when you're envious about what everybody else has, then you have issues with your relationships with other people and you just can't be content with what you have. And then Pastor Chris did a great job last week talking about the problems we have with spontaneity. And if we could just budget and learn to live on a budget, we could save ourselves at least $450 a month, and we wouldn't be broke and living like broke people. And so this morning, we're going to be talking about one of the problems that the Grinch had, and that was of greed. The idea that everything is for my consumption, that really what I need is just a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a little bit more. And he kind of thought to himself, if I can take away all the moreness in somebody else's life, they won't have anything to be happy about, because the only way you can be happy at Christmas is if you have the stuff. And so if I could take away the stuff, then I could take away somebody's joy. And that was sort of his idea, which was a very broken way of thinking. When the word greed comes up, it's funny, automatically everybody kind of goes back to that documentary that was done back in the 80s about that Wall Street executive, Gordon Gekko, who famously said, greed is good. Some of you are thinking, was that a documentary or was that a movie? I can't remember. It was a movie, Wall Street. And he says, greed is good. You know why he said greed is good? Because it works. It's funny. It's funny how much that's stuck. Greed is good because greed works. It's what causes people to get up and go to work. It's what causes companies to be profitable. As a matter of fact, he says it's what our nation was founded on. Greed is good because greed works. And it's funny how that's sort of been the line from that movie that is stuck. What gets lost, though, is that that movie is about somebody whose greed so overtook them that it left them where greed always leaves somebody. Broke. It leaves them ostracized from everybody else around them, completely isolated, and everything that they have is completely unfulfilling. And that's pretty much where greed leaves. And if you watch that movie, that's where it ends up, is he ends up alone, I think in jail, losing everything, and he's absolutely hollow and empty inside. So greed. Greed basically is a never-ending lust for more. Greed can never be satisfied. It always just needs more and more and more. Greed causes us to confuse what we want with what we need, because greed sees everything as a need, because greed says, I have to have more in order to be happy, so therefore everything is a need. And what's interesting is that when Jesus says this comment about life does not consist of the abundance of your things or abundance of your stuff, abundance of your possessions, it's interesting because it doesn't fall in a section where Jesus was getting up trying to teach about money. It wasn't like he, you know, got up that morning and said, you know, what can I teach you about today? I need to give another message on money and possessions. I know, I'll come up with a couple bullet points. I got a couple good stories. I'll share with this with the crowd. Actually, he's talking about something so much more than money at that point. And if you go to Luke chapter 12, he's talking to them about the things that really matter in life, the big picture things in life. He says in there, he says, listen, I tell you, whoever publicly acknowledges me before others, the Son of Man will also acknowledge him before the angels of God. In other words, when you're standing in the throne room, before God himself, and he wonders, why on earth should I allow you in? Jesus says, if you know me, we have a relationship, I'll vouch for you. I'll say, he's my bud. I died for his sins. Let him in. He says, however, if you disown me right now here on earth, and you want to live your life like we don't have a relationship and I don't exist, then guess what? When we get to that day, I'll act like I don't know you either. That's pretty much how it's going to go down. Now think about this. Is this not what matters most in life? Is it not? I mean, really, this is what really life is all about. I tell you this almost every single week. Life is about nothing more than a loving relationship with Jesus Christ that you'll enjoy for all eternity. And so he's talking in this message he's given. He's like right there talking about one of the very most crucial points of your entire existence is when you're moving from this life about to see what your fate is for the next. He says, on that day, if we have a relationship, I'll vouch for you. I promise you, I guarantee it. I mean, it's the very essence of what life is all about in that moment he's talking about it. Which prompts this guy in the crowd. As Jesus was talking about what's most important in life, it prompts this guy in the crowd to talk about what's most important in his life. And it's like as if he finally gets himself in the earshot of Jesus. He says, hey, Jesus, that's a good point. I got a question for you real quick. Can you tell my brother to give me what I got coming to me? What? And Jesus is like, dude. And the Hebrew technically translates man, but I think you'd just be like, dude. Are you not listening to anything I talked about? What business is that of mine? Why are you bringing me into this stuff? Why? What do you want me to come over to your house and, you know, sort out what's yours and what's his? Why is this of any relevance? Life doesn't consist of the abundance of your stuff. I'm trying to tell you what life is all about, but you're not hearing me because you're so focused on what you think life is all about, your stuff. And if you notice in that moment what happens while Jesus is talking about what's most important in life, this guy wants to talk about what's most important in his life. And it's funny because that's the exact same thing that seems to happen at Christmas. I mean, if you go back to what the Christmas story is it not about the central truth and the central theme of what life is really all about? I mean, it's that pivotal moment in history where God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever would have a relationship with him, believe in him, trust him, place their faith in him, whoever would have that relationship with him would not perish but have everlasting life. That's John 3:16, the heart of the gospel, the heart of what life is all about. And all of that begins, and all that sort of is becoming the whole, like a fulfillment of all history. The beginning of that fulfillment happens at Christmas, where the creator God who created all heaven and all earth, everything that has been made through him. By all things, everything has been made by him and is held together by him. That God came down to earth in the form of a man. And not just a man, but he came as a baby. And not just a baby, but a baby born into a peasant family. Not just in a peasant family, but a peasant family who is on a journey and doesn't even have a place to put him, and they end up in a borrowed feeding trough. I mean, could you get a more humble entrance into this world than what he does? And why does he do it? Well, everywhere else you see anybody who comes from God's presence, just radiating God's presence, who comes down to earth, what happens? It happens all through the Christmas story. People freak out. They shrink back in fear. I mean, unapproachable glory, literally unapproachable glory. You can't even speak straight in their presence. And so what God's doing, he's got this struggle, he's got this issue, is that he wants to reestablish a relationship with all of humanity that's drifted far away from him. But how does he do that? Because if he comes down in any way, shape, or form reflecting his own glory, it decimates people and leaves them falling flat on their face. So how can he do it to a place or a way where they could come near and they would be approachable? I know, I'll come down as a baby. I mean, who's afraid of a baby, right? Well, some of y'all are, but come on, seriously. I mean, your baby's not going to hurt you. You may spit up on you a little bit. I'm just saying real quick, I don't want your baby to spit up on me. I'm going to say that side note. But the point is he came down in such an approachable way. And as a matter of fact, why do we give gifts anyway? The correct answer, of course, is always because God gave us a gift. For God so loved, he gave. And when you love people, it's what you do. You want to give to them. And so we just give gifts, not because some guy named Nicholas back in whatever century, you know, went around town giving away gifts. We don't do it because of that. We do it simply because God loved us and he gave us a gift. And so the gifts we give each other is a reflection of the greatest gift that the world has ever received. And the very fact that we've already been given everything we need is everything that Christmas is all about. And so somehow we take this season, this message, this topic of what Christmas is all about is what life is all about, and somehow we turn it into what my life is all about. Last year, he got a phone. I want a phone. If I don't get a phone, I'm going to be mad this Christmas. Charlie's got an Xbox. How come I don't got an Xbox? My PlayStation 3 stinks. I need a new thing. I need something else. I want to switch over to the Xbox world. How come I don't have one? Last year, you got a car. It was a December to remember. I want something to remember this year. I mean, we all echo what Sally says to Charlie Brown, right? I just want what I got coming to me, right? Remember the Charlie Brown Christmas? So I want some money. I want what I got coming to me. I got to get mine. And so in the same way that Jesus is talking about what this is all about and what life is all about, and this guy takes his opportunity to make it about what he's focused on, we do the very same thing with Christmas. And somehow we move from what life is all about to what my life is all about. And so he says, listen, hey, dude, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for life does not consist of the abundance of your things. So he says, man, what business is of mine? Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Now, when you say watch out to somebody, what is going on in a certain setting where you would say watch out?
Danger.
There's something coming at them that they obviously don't see, right? Like a big old rock or a board or a ball or something like that is coming at their head, and you say, watch out! Which in reality is probably not something you should say because it's usually coming at them from behind, and so you say, watch out, and all they do is they just turn so it hits them right square in the face. You probably shouldn't say duck, right? You know, duck, that's really what you should come out. But you say, watch out, because they can't see something that's coming at them that's going to hurt them, right? So when he says, watch out against all kinds of greed, how many of y'all struggle with greed? Okay, six of you realize it. The rest of you, I need to say, watch out! Watch out, okay? Because it's coming at you in every shape and form. It's coming at you in all kinds of ways, and you don't even see it coming, and it's going to hurt you. It's going to leave you broke. It's going to take away everything that you have. It's going to take away your joy. It's going to take away your fun. It's going to ruin Christmas for you. It's going to ruin your life, as a matter of fact. And it's coming at you, and it's in all different kinds. And you see, when you think of greed, you think of Gordon Gekko. You think of somebody who has a lot of money. But I don't got money, so how could I be greedy? Greed is an attitude. It's not a financial position. Greed is the attitude that says, I just need more. I mean, Jesus goes on and he summarizes this whole talk. What he does, he says, watch out against all kinds of greed. He then tells a whole bunch of stories. You can read them if you want in Luke chapter 12. I don't have time to get to them all this morning. And then he summarizes it up by this statement. He says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. In other words, where you're spending your money is a gauge. It's sort of a one of those gauges up on your car. It tells you what's going on inside your car. It's sort of a picture, a window into what's going on inside your soul. So you look at what you do with your money, your possessions, your thing, or how you relate to your money, possessions, and things, and that's a picture, a window of where your heart's really at. So for instance, when you go out Christmas shopping, is it easier to think of what you want for Christmas or what somebody else in your family wants? Now, I know. They're just hard to shop for, right? They're impossible. They're the ones who already have everything. I mean, how do you get something for the person who already has everything, right? Clearly, they're the greedy one because they already have everything. You know, they have all that stuff. They're going to be greedy. Me, I could tell you what I need because I don't have a lot. There's a lot of things I need right now, and I could tell you, which is why when I went out shopping on Black Friday, how many of y'all bought something for yourself? Anybody? 6, 7, 3, 4? Liars. According to statistics, 70% of y'all bought something for yourself. Only about 7% of you are willing to admit it. Watch out. Watch out. You're greedy and you're a liar. See? It's always easier to think about the stuff I need than it is to think about the stuff that I could give you. And therein lies part of the problem, because the only sure cure for greed is giving. Because greed is all about, I got to have more, 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 I got to have more. They did a study, U.S. News and World Report did a study many years back. I remember reading this and I've gone back to it several times. They did a study, the question was, how much is enough? How much is enough? And so they asked people of different economic places along the spectrum, how much is enough? What would it take for you to be fulfilled, content, happy, where you could say, that's it, that's really all I need to live in life? And so they asked people who made about $25,000 a year as a household and said, you know, what do you need to have enough? And on average, they came out to be about $52,000. And they said, you know, that's interesting. And so they went to people who made 52 and on up. And so they said, you know, what about the people who make double what you say is enough? What do you think they need? You ask somebody who makes $100,000, what do you think they said? $192,000. And if you think about it, just pause for a moment. if I told you, and it all came out basically all the way in the past, all the way along the spectrum, if you made about double what you have right now, that'd be enough. How about you? If I doubled your salary, would that be enough?
Yeah.
Ecclesiastes 5:10, one of the wealthiest people of his generation, or probably the wealthiest people of all generations, said, whoever loves money will never have enough. Because the guy who's making 100 at one point probably made 52. But when he made 52, he had to have 100. And when he got to 100, the bar just kept on moving. It just kept on moving. John D. Rockefeller was one of the wealthiest men of his generation, was asked, how much does it take to be happy? His answer, just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. If you love money, you never have enough. The greed just says, I need a little bit more. And the fallacy is that you'll someday get to a point where it's enough. You never will. I mean, at what point, if your boss came in and said, you know, we were looking at it and we really love to give you a raise, you know, I don't think I need it. I was thinking, I'm so content right now with what I have. I give it to Sally. She works hard. Who says that? Nobody, right? What happens? It more looks like this. How much is the raise? $3,000 this next year. Wonderful. Honey, guess what? $3,000 raise. That's awesome. We can buy, literally, before the money's even in your account, you've already spent it, right? It's already allocated. You already have a place for it. There was already a want need that it was already going to go to. It was just the ever-consuming vortex of greed just sucks it up. And so you know what we need? A little bit more. Because clearly that didn't satisfy it. And your needs, your wants, just continue to grow with your income. So whoever loves money never has enough. That's why greed just comes at us and comes at us and comes at us. It's always attack. It's the only way to cure greed is to give. It's the only way to do it. I talked a couple years ago about what do you do when you see somebody on the side of the road asking for money? I said, give it to them. And somebody was reminding me out in the lobby this morning. Basically what I said is, I know why you don't, okay? Because there's always a good reason not to be generous, right? Isn't there? There's always a good reason not to be generous. There's always a good reason not to give somebody something. And your thought in your mind, because you know what they're going to spend it on, right? Nobody ever uses that money for food. It never goes to any good purpose. It always goes to drugs. It always goes to alcohol, right? They're just going to misuse it. Besides, that guy's probably not even homeless. He probably drives a Cadillac. You can make 65 to 100 grand a year. I've seen studies that show you can make that much just begging on the street. You know, if I didn't have any self-respect, I'd just quit my job and I'd beg like that. You think about the lifestyle, I could probably make more money doing that. It's all tax-free, right? I'm not giving him a dollar. Because I remember saying that morning, I said, because I don't want to come before God and say, God, I used all the money you gave me from me, and I was not a sucker with a dollar. Nobody took advantage of me, God. Did it for you. I said, rather, wouldn't it be better to go up there and say, God, every time I saw somebody who was in need, I gave to them. Do you really think God's going to look back and go, moron? Only about 10% of that did any good. The rest of it, you were just, you know, fueling the drug trade. Sit over there on the corner. I got to think about what I'm going to do with you. Is that really how that's going to go down? So the other day, I'm driving through and I see this guy asking for money. And the thing is, I always have at least $2.03 in my car. The reason why is because every morning I get two donuts. Don't get on me for this. I get two donuts that cost $2.03. So I always have exactly $2.03 in my car at all times. And so sure enough, I was down to my last $2.03 for my donut money. And I saw this guy there on the side of the road, and my thought was kind of having this like conversation. It says, you know, you said every time you see somebody, you're going to roll down your window, you're going to give them what you have, and you're going to give them something. And so you've got your donut money in there. You need it for breakfast tomorrow. But it's like, you know, you can go without donuts, couldn't you? Give them the $2. I kept the $0.03. That would seem kind of odd. So I gave him the $2. And I was like, you know, I can go without a donut. Sacrificially give. And I drove away and I thought to myself, I don't need to go without a donut. I can go by the bank. And the thought occurred to me, do we even know what it is to sacrificially give? Most of us have so much, we don't even know what it is to sacrificially give because there's such an abundance. That's how ridiculously wealthy you are. The fact that you could give somebody $2, which is more than what half the world makes in a single day, the fact that you could give them that and it's not even a sacrificial gift. Just let that sink in. And the only way to break the greed is to be generous. And what I love about you as a church is you guys have led the way in generosity. There's some signs out there that says, you know, who do we want to be as a church? What are the it factors that makes us more like Christ? And one of those is that we would lead the way in generosity. That's what Jesus did. He led the way in generosity. And there's a story with this church you need to know. about how we led the way in generosity. When we first started this church, we had $12,000 in the bank. That may seem like a lot. It's not. Because when you start a church, you really have no money coming in because there's nobody there. And so somebody asked us once, like, you know, so how are y'all doing financially? I'm like, oh, we're not doing good at all. We're just trusting God for this whole thing. So what do you mean by that? I was like, well, with the way our expenses go and the way that the income stream is right now, we have about 4 months to live as a church, maybe three, really. And I was like, wow, you worried about that? Like, no, we're just excited. We get, you know, 3 months to do God's work here in Virginia Beach. And, you know, at the end of 3 months, we may just close doors and say that was wonderful, that was fun, it was great. We led as many people to Christ as we could with what we had, and that's really what we're here to do. Well, you know, the first month went by, and actually a little bit of money actually came in. And so I redid the calculations, like, we got 4 months we can go as a church right now. This is pretty cool. Next month, more people started coming, and by this time, I ran the calculation. Yeah, we were still losing money every month, but that's okay, because now we had enough money coming in that we could get 5 months. And I was like, this is exciting. We can actually make it through our first summer, because this was like, you know, May or so, and I was like, we can actually make it through the summer now. This is awesome. And so I remember somebody came in and asked me, like, so let me get this straight. Where you're at financially right now is in 5 months, this church not going to exist. I'm like, yeah, if things keep going like this, that's pretty much it. Like, what's that mean for you? I'm like, well, it means I move in with my parents and live in their basement. We called it the basement plan. It's not a very fun plan, but it's where we were at. And so they said, well, doesn't that worry you? I'm like, well, at the end of the day, this is God's church, and if he wants it to continue, it's going to continue. Now, at the same time we were doing this, we were also giving 10% of everything that came in away to the church at large. In other words, to help other people start churches. We did it, you know, towards disaster relief, to help out in mission projects like we have in Nicaragua, etc. And you might come and ask, let me get this straight. You're going to burn out 5 months from now. Why on earth are you giving anything right now? Shouldn't you keep what you have and let that fuel you? And then when you have like enough to like support yourself, then give? Like, there's a problem with that. There's never a good time to give. You see, because by the time we get to the point where we're breaking even and we think now we can give, you know what's going to happen? We're going to say, you know, we're barely breaking even. We really need to get to the point where we have at least 3 months expenses, which if you've been in business school, that's pretty much what they say, 3 months expenses on hand to make sure you're financially stable. So we really need to wait till we have 3 months expenses built up, and then we can give. Then it would be a perfect time to give. You know what happens then? You get to that point, you think to yourself, you know, here we are, we're a portable church meeting in a school. You know, we need to save money for a building. And when we get a building, then will be a good time to give. You know what a good time to give is always? Tomorrow. It's never good to give now. It's always good to give tomorrow. I always have more tomorrow. More is going to be good. I'm really excited about tomorrow. But right now, I got a crisis. I got a need. I can't trust God for that. I got to trust myself. Even though my money is telling me to trust God, I'm going to go ahead and trust money. So isn't that kind of always ironic? And so we said, you know, we're not going to wait for a better day to give. We're going to give now. And if God only wants us here for 5 months, and then wants us here for 5 minutes, and we're okay with that, but we're going to give. And so, sure enough, wouldn't you know, 6 months into this whole crazy endeavor, I ran the calculation for how many months we have to live, and my calculator came up E. And I was like, I thought I was like doing the formula wrong. Well, what it was is we had broke even that month. And when you break even, you can go on for an infinity. And so the calculator should have said I for infinity. Really, it was just saying E is in an error, like you can't do this calculation because you can go on forever. And that's really kind of cool because we've gone on now forever, because that was back in 2009. And so we broke even that month. And what happened after that was pretty amazing. I got a phone call about this building. And I just want to show you a quick video. Okay, I got to warn you, because everybody else totally misses the first part, which is the best part. I had hair, okay? So just laugh now, get it out of your system. Yes, I have literally lost every hair on top of my head because of this church. That's okay. But I had hair back then. And I'd gotten a call about this church that was looking to close its doors, and they called us, asked if we were interested in this building. And at the time, this property was valued at about $4 million. This is back in 2008, 2009, at the height of the real estate market. Remember that? And so this property was estimated to be about worth $4 million. There was a grocery store that was looking to buy the property at the time. And I got a call from a church, and this is what happened.
That was my first time at a center.
You're in here a bunch. That's right. Cool. In addition to having hair, I don't know if you caught, that was our first kids program we did for the Christmas in the school back then too. A lot of neat stuff in there. So many neat things happened. So here we are. You know, if we'd always been waiting to give, we said we want to wait till we got a building. Well, you know, we gave and God just gave us a building. It was amazing. And so many things happened that way. I'm sitting next to Colleen. So one of the things is, that foyer had a bunch of walls and stuff, and we wanted to open up that foyer area so we had kind of like a meeting space. And I remember going, I was like, this is a crazy ask, but we need a steel beam. Anybody here know anybody who does steel beam work? And Colleen's like, that's what I do for a living. What do you need? It's like, what are the odds? In a church of 100 people, there's somebody in there who puts in steel beams. And so we had the steel beam, and God provided it there. And so we were sitting here, and we said, you know, it's going to cost us about $40,000 to renovate this place. This is where the story gets neater and neater, right? Doesn't end there. So we said, we're going to talk about $40,000. Well, we have this truck. I call it the Cadillac of church plants, like a 26-foot moving truck with a hydraulic lift and a, you know, trailer full of stuff. So we could sell all the stuff in there. We could probably get $25,000-$30,000 at least out of that. And we were, you know, almost broke as a church, and that would almost pay for the renovation. That'd be great. And then somebody said, you know, we were just given a $4 million gift. What if we just gave that truck away as freely as we were given this property? We said, that'd be kind of crazy. Let's do it. And we prayed and said, you know, there's going to be some church planner who moves here from out of state This is honest to goodness. I just had this vision. There'd be this church planter move here from out of state who would have a heart to plant a church somewhere in Hampton Roads, and we could just, you know, he would never have no idea how God was going to provide for them, and we would just give it to him. And sure enough, wouldn't you know, like a month later, I met this guy named Eric and wanted to plant a church here. And sure enough, he and his family and another family and like three people they'd already led to Christ came and stood right here in front of the stage, and we just said, we want to give you this basically church planting kit in a box. And they just stood here with tears, thanking God for it. The name of that church is Bridgepoint. It is alive and growing in Gloucester, Virginia, and are excited about what they're continuing to do. And here's where the story gets neat. I mean, it keeps going. So what ends up happening is we then, many years later, decide we want to plant a church in town center. So we need some portable equipment and a truck. So we happen to call. I was like, you know, I wonder how they're doing with that truck. I wonder if they're still using it. So I call them up, and wouldn't you know, they had just been given a building like we were given a building. And they had just had a meeting that week that said, what are we going to do with this truck? We said, we would love to have that truck. And they said, well, drive it back across the water. It's your truck. And so they gave us back the truck. And so we used that truck to plant town center. It's one that's sitting out in front. And so we bought some more updated equipment for it. We planted town center. And of course, as you know, most of y'all were a part of town center. And we moved town center campus back over here. So the truck's been sitting out there. And Jesus says, you know, be careful. Don't store up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy. And somebody's like, you know, if that stuff sits out there, moth and rust is going to destroy what's in it. We really need to think about giving that to a church or another church plant somewhere. And so we kind of were like, that'd be kind of a crazy idea. What if we sold that and used, it's like, whoa. We don't sell stuff. We just don't. So said, well, you know, let's look for another church plant. Well, then right as we're having this conversation, that's still out in the air, somebody says, hey, I just read in the paper, there's a church that meets over Kellum, and some bum stole all of their stuff. They stole their trailers, and they didn't have anything. It's called Cornerstone Church. And somebody's like, well, call them up. So this past week, their pastor came over here and met with Pastor Chris, and was like, hey, how would you like the Cadillac of church plants? Oh, and by the way, it's chock full of church planting boxes and everything you need to set up a church plant. And they just kind of looked at us like, are you kidding me right now? And so here's the thing. So that truck has just kind of bounced around and been a blessing everywhere it's been, and now you all as a church are leading the way in generosity and are meeting a desperate need. See, it's like this. Sometimes you ask God and you pray out to God and ask for a blessing, and sometimes you get to be the answer of the prayer and you get to be the blessing of God, and it's so fun. It really truly is more blessed to give than receive, is it not? And so I want to thank the leadership of our church and thank you all as a church for just your generosity. And here's where the story gets even better. So the week that we did that, the week that we behind the scenes was 2 weeks ago, we didn't tell y'all anything about this because we weren't sure if they wanted the truck. We were kind of waiting, everything went down. So we already made the decision, we're giving it. Whether they want it or not, we're giving it. Y'all gave the largest offering of the entire year that week without even knowing it. Y'all realize that? It was almost double what normally comes in. You just can't outgive God. It's ridiculous. You just can't outgive God. I could continue the story. But I just want to let you know is that you as a church have led the way in generosity. And my hope is that you all collectively as a church would inspire all of you individually as families to give in the same way you're giving as a church. Why? Because you just can't outgive God. And that's not karma, by the way. What's happened with that truck and happened with these buildings is not karma. It is a God who promises to provide. You with me on that? It is a God who's promised to provide. So may you break the bonds of greed in your life. Make Christmas about what Christmas is about, not let it be about what you want to be about, and to truly give as Christ has given you this season. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for just being able to see a picture from an aerial view like what you see life as. From the date that that truck first was driven by somebody in this church, you'd already seen all of its days from the first into the last. We just thank you that we've gotten to be a part of giving and re-giving and receiving and giving. Father, we thank you for the work that Cornerstone Church is doing in another part of our city. We thank you, Lord, that their ministry can continue as they cast a vision for where their church is going to go this morning. May they have the kind of morning we had many years ago when we were given this facility. That the joy of being a blessing would fill our hearts as it's filled theirs. That this wouldn't be just something that we experience as a church, but something we do individually. We do this as families. We don't trust in what we have, Father, but we trust in the God who's provided what we have. Thank you, Father, for this season, for leading the way in your generosity to us. And in Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.